Not everybody has access to functional medicine. Not everybody has the funds. Like, I understand that and I get that, which is why we try to share as much education as we can to just teach parents, hey, there's some healthy steps, but the best thing that you can do is just protect the four walls of your home. And that is always my take home with our parents is, you know, your diet is 100% on you. You can make sure that your air quality is good. You can make sure that you're not using, you know, harsh toxins or cleaners or products, soap, shampoos, detergents.
Welcome to Functional Moms Podcast, lifestyle medicine for women over 40. Let's age on our own terms.
This episode is for parents looking for an alternative solution to common childhood ailments like constipation, eczema, chronic ear infections, allergies, anxiety, and more. Prescriptions and over-the-counter medications are routinely prescribed for these conditions, but this is a band-aid approach and doesn't get to the root cause.
This episode is also for parents who might be looking for help with nutrition or supplements for their children or teens. Most pediatrician well visits consist of vaccines and growth charts, but nutrition isn't even mentioned, and blood work isn't routinely done either.
Our guest is Jessica Policki, a board-certified nurse practitioner credentialed through the American Association of Nurse Practitioners. She is trained in functional medicine and an active member of the American Holistic Nurses Association. She is the owner of Well-Rooted Pediatrics, and her passion is empowering parents to find their voice while finding the root cause of their children's symptoms.
Jessica, thank you so much for coming on the show today. We absolutely love your Instagram account, Well-Rooted Pediatrics. And for our listeners, you should definitely check this out. You debunk so much information about pediatric care. And so we're really curious, what led you to open the practice?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to come talk with you ladies and get some more knowledge and education out there. You know, the journey is definitely very large, and there wasn't one thing that led me to opening the practice, but many things. I think I'll, you know, the statements start with your own children. So, you know, going through and having my own child and seeing where I wasn't getting, you know, the help through wellness visits, I was asking the questions and was being turned down, you know, was told I had to do things that wasn't my gut was telling me, was a big part of that. When I started as a nurse practitioner, I started in conventional pediatrics. So meaning I worked in an office where we were insurance driven, medication driven, there was no alternative or holistic options. So I quickly had to learn how to adapt through that and find my way through the path of those children. And what I was finding was that these kids were getting sicker by the day. What we were doing wasn't helping. The food allergies were increasing, the febrile seizures were increasing. And to me, I'm thinking, if this is the generation of our future, then we're doing it wrong. And these kids deserve better. So again, through the eyes of my own children, I just kept digging and digging and digging and started to find natural solutions and realized, okay, if there's a natural solution for reflux, or if I'm finding natural solutions or learning about lip and tongue ties, for an example, there has to be a deeper root to all of this. So it was just this large hole that I kept digging and stirred all of that up, which led me to my journey of giving parents 100% hope and empowerment and finding the root cause.
That is so awesome. You say you provide parent-led care. What this means?
Yeah. So I think most times when you go to the pediatrician or a doctor or a provider or family practice or wherever you're going, you're kind of just told, like, this is what we're going to do, right? Here's your meds. Here's this. You're kind of on your way. And there's not much time for discussion or open discussion. Now, part of that is there's not enough time because, you know, these offices have to see a patient every 10 minutes due to taking insurance, and they don't have that time to spend with you, right? But the other side is just also not knowing, because we're also not taught this stuff through your training and your schooling. So for us, we are really, we're spending that time through wellness visits, or if it's not our comprehensive functional visits, or even a sick visit, to say, here's my findings, here are my thoughts. How do you feel about that, right? And if there's reservations or if there's questions, we're meeting them in the middle. But also we've developed that relationship where I say, hey, I'm really concerned about X, Y, and Z, and I think that we need an antibiotic, and I really want to follow through with some supplements, though, to make sure we're not doing too much damage. They trust me in that because they know that I wouldn't do that for my own. And I always tell parents that, and I lead conversations with, I feel strongly about this, and I promise you I wouldn't guide you this way if I wouldn't do it for my own child, but here's why I want to do this. And it needs to be that way. Like, this is we work for the parents, right? So like the parents are the ones driving this ship, and not always do parents know. And I know there's so many people that will troll on the accounts and say that, oh, well, you're not a doctor, or these parents don't know, or they didn't know, whatever. It means nothing. It means listening to the parent and guiding through them and making them comfortable with their decisions. Because in the end of the day, they're the ones that are going to have to deal with the side effects or the guilt or the not knowing if we don't give them that informed consent on both sides. So we are just empowering and encouraging parents to understand, you know, hey, the eczema is not normal. While it's common, we can find other ways. And here's how I would actually go about doing that. I had one yesterday that was just a wellness visit, and they had been dealing on and off with constipation for 7 years. And when it comes with a vengeance, and they use Miralax. And mom recently learned about Miralax and decided to kind of like start to not use that and find some alternatives through our Instagram page. But then I said, here's why I would look into this deeper, and here's the testing that I would recommend. And she was blown away. She's like, nobody has ever discussed that with us or given us an option to see what the microbiome is doing, or if we have an overgrowth of bacteria or whatever the story may be through that. So again, just educating and giving them options, parents will be more led to want to find the root cause if they know that there is another way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's huge, because as a parent, it can be intimidating going into a pediatrician's office. Obviously, they have the medical degree, but at the end of the day, you do know your kid. Obviously, you're spending all the time with your kid, and sometimes you're afraid to kind of listen to your gut, or, you know, you feel like maybe the information is coming one way. It's not like a two-way situation. They're kind of like, no, it's constipation. Miralax is the solution. Here you go. You know, and not really, they're not too concerned about the root cause. So you start to really question yourself. So I think this is massive that you're empowering the patients to be a part of the conversation. The parents are part of the conversation, because that can be really challenging for people. So going a little further on the constipation thing, because that is such a common thing, and Miralax is traditionally the solution from conventional pediatrics, I guess, what are the concerns about being on Miralax for a long period of time?
So Miralax it works based off of fluid. So, I mean, it pulls all that water, if you will, right, into the colon to help stimulate and, you know, utilize into a bowel movement. But what happens is if somebody is constantly having to take something, that natural peristalsis or that natural movement of the colon kind of stops. So as soon as people stop the Miralax, their symptoms tend to come back. And they're always like, I don't understand. Well, the body kind of forgets what it's doing. It's like a falsifying motion, right? So when we're giving that, it just doesn't know where to go with it. So with that, then also you have different ingredients, and you have all these disclaimers that have come out through Miralax that have stated more like emotional and like neuropsychiatric states or behavioral changes. So when that really started to become prevalent and the black box warning was added to that, there's all these different groups now. I mean, there's a whole group on Facebook. It's like a Miralax parent support group of all these kids that have gone through some major emotional and neuropsychiatric states, all related to a medication that is just being used for constipation. So there's so many ways that we can figure out, number one, why, but also alternatives to get them to go if we need to do that, because that's still very important. You know, we don't just keep the kids constipated until we figure it out, but Miralax is just not the answer in our practice.
Okay. And so I guess what would be more of a root cause than approach to constipation?
Yeah. And I wish there was just one answer. There's definitely not. So it can go from, you know, food issues, food sensitivities, food allergies, celiac disease, right? And not every kid's going to present with like being super, super low weight and having severe stomach pain to be diagnosed with an autoimmune disease. So we look into that stuff. But then we do a very comprehensive stool test on almost every kid that has a constipation issue. I don't believe that a child should have to wait for all these different things and let's like a watch and see process, because it just is going to continue to get deeper and cause more inflammation. So we're very like from the beginning, fix it, don't wait. So we do a very comprehensive stool test that gives us 30 pages of what the exact microbiome is doing. So it breaks down the enzymes, it breaks down the pancreatic enzymes, it breaks down what the bile is doing through the gallbladder and that liver channel. And then it kind of guides us through like maldigestion, malabsorption. So we'll see if the fats are high, which then we tend to see these kids that have like some, maybe some failure to thrive issues, or they're having problems growing. And then we dig into like different viruses and bacteria and parasites, which parasites are goofy because you think about like, you have to collect that stool sample, and whatever's collected would have to be that's what's being looked at that moment, right? So that doesn't mean that you don't have parasites. It just means it wasn't probably collected in that sample, but sometimes we get lucky and we catch that parasite in that sample and we're able to treat that, or if there's a lot of them, then it can tend to be passed in every sample. So then when we're able to find an overgrowth of a bacteria, you know, we have so much bacteria, and sometimes people be like, oh, well, we shouldn't have strep, or we shouldn't have staph, like, the stuff should be present, but it shouldn't be overgrown, mm-hmm. right? So when we call that the dysbiosis, or that imbalance of bacteria, we need to stabilize that. So sometimes we have to use different supplements and herbals to kill that bacteria and help sustain to allow that even keel microbiome. We look for zonulin markers. So we're looking for leaky gut or intestinal permeability, where there's like holes in the gut, right? So those junctions aren't tight anymore. They're more spread apart. So everything is just kind of going into the bloodstream, causing that autoimmune response or that inflammatory response. So it guides us as to where to start, but like, what's driving what? If you have intestinal permeability or this inflammation in this leaky gut, then is the bacteria that's overgrown causing that, or the parasites causing that? You can't just like take supplements for leaky gut and not find why. And I think that's the part that kind of frustrates me, but then I also value parents trying to find their own answers through Instagram and TikTok and all that too, because they don't have anywhere else to go. But there's so many people just selling supplements and recommending these protocols, when really it's like they're wasting time and money, because you're kind of just scratching the surface with it.
Yeah. So this sounds like it's a very individual case by case situation. It's not a blanket approach. Yeah. So you're going to dig deeper with these parents and help them.
Exactly. And certain supplements will help. Like you said, it can, maybe they'll relieve some symptoms and get that child to not be miserable. But there's so much more that goes into that. And, you know, I just encourage parents to like just keep digging for that and finding those solutions.
I have to ask you about, because you mentioned about the Marilax having the black box warning, that it was causing essentially behavioral issues with kids. Is that what you're saying? And is that because of like the gut-brain connection there? Or what would be causing that?
No, it's due to more like the ingredients, the PEG ingredients being like more the one that's been studied and kind of maneuvered through that. But you have the right concepts. Sure, anything that comes into the body, and if that gut-brain connection is disrupted, it's just a one-path highway to the brain. But no, in that particular, it's more the ingredients that are made into that, kind of like Singular, same thing, like the ingredients that are put into that are what have shown to cause like the neuropsychiatric side effects. So not everything has that same effect.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for that, clearing up that a little bit on constipation. And we wanted to go through and just kind of debunk some other things that you typically, solution that you'd normally get when you go to the conventional pediatrics. We wanted to kind of look at some other things here. So chronic ear infections, super common in young kids. Usually the solution is antibiotics. And then a lot of kids, I know in my experience, and I think Raquel too, had a child that kept having repeated ear infections, so repeated rounds of antibiotics. And then the next solution is usually tubes, which we think, thankfully, I didn't have to go that far with my kid, but like that's usually the path that people end up on. So what are some things that people could do to get to the root cause of that?
Yeah, again, I wish there was one thing, but there's several, right? So when you look at this, I mean, I think that parents need to understand that removing organs like tonsils, adenoids, or gallbladder, or whatever, or having to like throw holes in ears is not the answer. Sure, they may say, we removed tonsils, we never had strep again. We put tubes in the ears, we never had an ear infection, they fell out, life was good. Great, I am so glad that was that easy for you, because that's usually not the case. Right? So again, allergies, seasonal allergy. When you're congested, you know, these kiddos, when you're born, these kids tend to be, they're more nasal breathers, and if they're breathing properly, but their eustachian tubes are more, they're just more even, right? And so they haven't dropped, and they haven't kind of facilitated that drainage part yet. So a lot of that tends to back up from the sinuses. The frontal sinuses aren't developed yet for several years, and it just kind of tends to pool. So that drainage process needs to be maneuvered. So whether through like chiropractic, or finding, you know, if there's environmental allergies that are causing that fluid to build up. Is there a mold exposure? We see this a lot. Moldy homes, moldy churches, moldy schools that can also lead to that mucus production and having that colonization of mold in the nasal cavity, which then can back up through the ears. Again, gut dysbiosis. So an imbalance of gut bacteria, because all of that has to do with the fact that nothing drains then once it hits that stomach, right? Everything kind of starts to back up. But a lot of it's just, you know, putting holes in ears for them to heal and have scar tissue, and then potentially needing another set or whatnot, because I mean, they fall out once they're put in, they fall out on their own. So they can fall out a month later, they can fall out years later, or they may have to go in and remove them because they don't fall out. But there's so many times that we'll see where the tympanic membrane is actually like healed over the tube. And now you have to go in and like, when they have to cut it out because it's not doing its job anyway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for me, it's like, okay, working through all these steps and seeing what's causing that, it could be a diet change. Mm-hmm. You know how many kids it's as simple as like, you have a food sensitivity that's causing you to have an excess of mucus production. And then that's leading to this congestion in the ears. It doesn't have to be your anaphylaxis, your hives. You know, I think so many people think like it can't be a food because they don't show any signs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I have to share with my daughter, I had a similar thing. She was getting the ear infections over and over again. And I was lucky enough to find a functional medicine provider. Like, and they, once they had me kind of remove the gluten and the dairy, we did add some probiotics for a bit. And then it calmed down her immune system and it stopped. She literally is 13, has never had another ear infection again. And we were literally like one ear infection away from looking at tubes as the solution. So...
Yeah. And that's crazy. I had a patient recently and they were right. They were due for tubes that month. She found us and she's like, let's try to give it a shot. She had been on like 6 antibiotics in 18 months or this little kiddo had, and we haven't had any since. And we did have one little ear infection that we were able to get through with supplements, herbs, and garlic oil and chiropractic. And she's like, holy cow, to think that we were that close mm-hmm. to surgery, right? So sometimes it's simple, you know, hey, let's just remove this. Let's address the allergens. Let's figure that part out. Sometimes we have to dig a little bit more, but knowing that like there is a way and there is an option is something that's huge. But sometimes by the time people find you, they already have hearing loss and they're already struggling. So we do have to do a risk benefit. We're not negligent. You know, we're not saying like, oh, let's just continue to do this and take your child's hearing for granted. You know, there's a time and a place where it's like, hey, learn more, do better. Let's just fix their body going mm-hmm. forward. Right. So there's no shame in that game. It's just a matter of like just educating and getting that out there.
Absolutely. And so you touched a little bit about eczema. Can you go into that a little bit more? Because I know that's a really common thing that like we see with kids all the time.
Exactly. It's very, very rare that you see a kiddo that doesn't have a positive zonulin or have that positive marker for intestinal permeability and an eczema child. And like I already explained, like you should have these really tight junctions with a beautiful mucus layer that kind of like is that absorbent for everything that is going through your GI system. But when everything is disrupted, there's no mucus barrier, everything's open. Now you've, again, you've developed that one way into the bloodstream. And the body is so protective, right? So it doesn't want anything in the bloodstream. So as soon as, you know, food is in there or particles that aren't supposed to be there, it's like, I always say it like tags them, right? And it says like, yep, red flag here, red flag here. So now you've developed an immune response, right? So when we tend to do food testing on these kids, the whole thing lights up like a Christmas tree and everything that they eat, they're positive for. And parents are like, oh my gosh, why? Think about it. Everything that you're putting them is putting in their bodies going to their bloodstream, right? So what do we have to do? You have to work. How did it start? It started in the gut. Let's work back. Let's do the comprehensive stool test. Let's maybe reduce some of the inflammatory foods for a little while so that we can reduce the inflammation while we rebuild. But then we gently start to increase again. Sometimes these kids have, you know, an overgrowth of bacteria on the skin that we really have to address through like different swabs and scrapings in the office and kind of test that through the lab, because sometimes it's more isolated to that. And then another big component that we see is mold. We see a ton of kids in eczema and mold. And again, they may not have all these other symptoms. And what families don't understand sometimes is it doesn't have to be every single family member, because everybody will always say, well, we're fine, or my other kids are fine. Genetics are goofy and everybody's got a different pathway. Everybody has a different way that they can detox. Some people have MTHFR, you know, one or two. So it's very complicated. And why one over the other? That was just the weaker link is always how I kind of reference that. And we have to pick them back up. So that skin could be showing you that there's a sign of something. And when parents leave and they go to Florida on vacation and they're in the salt water and they're out of their home for a week and their kids get better, it's a red flag for me. Because if you're out of your home and you're doing better, we need to figure that out. Sure. The sunshine helps, the salt water helps, right? But it's not going to clear everything up in the second. You come back and your symptoms worsen, check your environment out, right? And figure out if your environment's a safe place. But again, multifactorial, and there's a lot of different things that can cause it, which I always try to answer people's questions as much as I can on social media, but like not knowing the whole story, it's like, I'm not withholding the root cause, I promise. It's just, it's long conversations in history for us to determine which way we're going to go. We had several rounds of antibiotics, and there's just no good bacteria left in the microbiome. So everything is so weak that it's just all that bacteria seeps out to the skin.
So it's really like a warning sign, the eczema.
It is. And you'll have your parents be so super frustrated. You know, eczema tends to, in an infant, if it's going to happen, it tends to peak around 4 months. And parents are like, okay, well, you know, I was a home birth or I was a vaginal birth and I had no meds and I had no this and the baby is pure and I don't understand, but like we have eczema. Like I do all the right thing. Well, there could be a couple different factors. Like I said, was it a vaginal delivery? You know, did we have antibiotics? But how was your gut? How was your gut prior to you getting pregnant? Because that inoculation of that microbiome can definitely be disrupted. But also those enzymes and everything are starting to develop in baby, you know, starting around that 4 to 6 month time frame. So that's when we tend to hit that red flag of, whoop, I need help. Something's not right, you know? And we start very simple and we try to treat through mom first if she's breastfeeding, or do some powders and stuff, you know, glutamine and, you know, bovine colostrum and whatnot to kind of reseal and put out some of that inflammation. But there could be no external factors. And the fact that like where we came from could also be a factor
too. Sure. Yeah, that's something that was really blew my mind because I was breastfeeding my third child. She was, and you know, for 2 years I breastfed her. She has the worst food allergies ever. And I think it was probably my microbiome. Like, to be honest, I had issues, you know, IBS, leaky gut stuff. And I think I literally passed it on to her.
Exactly what happened with my second, because my first was fine. I was good then. And then, you know, something shifted between my first and my second with my own gut health. Yeah, here we are. Now I'm still fixing them to this day. So...
Okay. Yeah, right. Yes. I know my daughter has made great strides, but she still does have a few food allergies left. And so really interesting stuff, something that's not talked about at all, that a mother's microbiome could affect their children and all that. This is like very new, I think.
Yeah. Well, and you just said a few allergies left. Like that's something that we see is like when we're fixing this stuff, like we're repeating these labs and we're testing those markers and we see them go down. And so parents are like, well, you can't reverse this stuff. Like, you know, if I have a kid who's anaphylaxis to peanuts, I'm not going to make this kid try peanuts. Okay. But if we're like eating all of these things and they're coming up as an IgE or an allergy response in the blood, then yes, we go through healing and we repeat and then we gently start to introduce, because there is a way to reverse that stuff. You're not just stuck with
which is so hopeful and so exciting, because there are so many parents that are so desperate to really get to the bottom of things. So it's amazing what you're doing. So we did want to ask you also about ADHD is super common. And, you know, mostly the conventional route is to just do medications, but like, are there other ways people can look for that?
Absolutely. Diet is huge. And the amount of people that still say, and this, again, this is nothing on parents. It's just really not knowing that their child eats well. And then we get these food logs and we kind of see what they don't. School, unfortunately, is not setting these kids up for success with their breakfasts and their lunches and their snacks and their, you know, they can't bring fresh whatever, but they can have goldfish. And it's like, I'm so confused. Seriously. Right? So you expect these kids to sit, you know, 6 hours a day with this type of lack of nutrition, if you will, and these fillers, and it's not going to work. So diet definitely needs to be addressed. And that needs to be addressed on a nationwide level, but that's neither here nor there. But like starting your kid's day off with a bowl of cereal because you're quick, or even if it's just, you know, homemade whatever with maple syrup, like if that child struggles with the sugar intake, their brain goes through a spike and a crash. You have lost it. Hence why so many of these kids do terrible after lunch or snack. And if you watch that and you kind of coordinate, you know, and we talk to our parents, a lot of the kids, they struggle either A, first thing in the morning, or B, first thing in the afternoon. And those are the classes they tend to struggle with. Now, of course, there's all sorts of different things. Like I said, the inflammation in the gut can be a factor too. And when that's present, there is we already talked about gut malabsorption. So with that goes malabsorption of vitamins and minerals. And unfortunately, we're so depleted in minerals due to the soil that's been so tilled and so sprayed and so altered in the country with our vegetables and our fruits, that also makes it more challenging. So we're looking at micronutrients in these kids, and we're testing to ensure that we're not deficient in copper or zinc or vitamin A or B6, because these are all so important. And lately, the amount of kids that are deficient in B2 is, it's like I'm having kids that are coming up as a zero. And so it's like, all right, if we can fix these little gaps, right? So like addressing supplements is something that we're always talking about, because if you can be perfect in your diet, but unfortunately, if your diet's not doing the work for you because everything is depleted, like sometimes we do need to fill in those gaps, right? So we look at those micronutrients, but also with ADHD can come like impulsivity or like behavioral challenges or like OCD type behaviors or even gross motor tics and lead to more of that. So we're looking at bacteria and viruses like Epstein-Barr, mycoplasma, strep, kind of like, you know, use the term PANS or PANDAS. All of that kind of goes hand in hand. So where did it start and where is it now ended, right? And we kind of just work through all of the middle. Was it an abrupt change? Or has this been something that's kind of been a struggle for a long time? But I can't tell you how many parents, when parents come into us for these challenges, nobody leaves on meds. No one. And I can 100% say that with certainty. And then it's not that they're not getting better and then they're going and getting meds. It's that we're getting resolutions and we're working with plans, or if we have to do IEPs or working with schools to say, hey, here's what we're dealing with. We work through detoxing the liver. We're opening up the detox pathways. Because again, if they're MTHFR positive, they may store 80 to 90% of their toxins and they're only getting rid of 10 to 20. Like that's a lot for sure. A little dude, right? Everybody's like, oh, you shouldn't need a liver detox. Like no one knows, you guys don't know what you're doing. You don't know the importance of a liver. Trust me, we do, right? But like when you're cleaning the, when you're kind of like washing through that, and the body is just filled with so many toxins that we weren't exposed to as kids, they need a reset. And then we build the nutrients back up and we're addressing the diet and we work with our nutritionist. And then these kids, within 6 weeks, they have improvements. And the best is we always tell parents, like, don't go to the school and say you're doing all this stuff. Let them come to you and say, what did you do? And that happens all the time, where parents will email us and say, hey, what med did you start so-and-so on? Because they're completely different. And I'm like, yes, like we did it, right? Because it's like they deserve so much more than that. And I've seen it with my own. If they're at sports or they're out with whatever and they had something, holy Toledo, it's like they're completely disconnected with their body. Like we don't do it at home, but I'm also like not the person that's like going to put them in a corner and isolate them from their softball team or whatever, right? But it's making those educated decisions and know, like, you may not feel well afterwards. And my 10-year-old now, she won't take that. She won't do the red whatever. She doesn't want to feel that way. She would just give me the water. I don't want it to alter my brain. My 8-year-old, he's a boy. He's like, give me all the things. If it's put in front of him, he's like, yeah, I don't care what you say. Like, this just all sounds like a great idea. So it's education through that too, because a lot of these kids and these families have to relearn. Like, I didn't grow up that way. Like, I had to relearn the entire diet thing, reading labels. Like, that was never a thing, right? So empowerment, education, and knowing, like, changing it from the beginning. But there's many different ways that can affect your focus, and it just depends on what's driving it.
Yeah, it sounds like there's so many ways, but very hopeful, because there's so many things that you can work on to improve symptoms. I do want to circle back just when you mentioned you're seeing so many kids low on the B2, I think it was. What I'm just curious, like, what you think that would be the reason for that, and then also what are the symptoms like if you are low in that? Would it be the focus or?
Yeah, that tends to be a big thing. Again, with the B2, the zinc and the copper are the biggest things that we see, and there's so many published studies even on the zinc copper ratio that you guys can even look up yourself or even viewers as well. And just kind of explaining that, if I always say, look at it all as a piece of a puzzle. If that piece is missing and you can't find that piece, the puzzle's not complete, right? It's going to look pretty good. Like, you're going to get an idea of what the picture looks like and what that puzzle is supposed to be, but that one piece is still gone. So it's a matter of like focusing on that. Like, I wish I knew exactly why those minerals are completely missing, because it's interesting. It tends to be the same ones. I just think that we're not getting enough of it in our diet. There's still so many processed foods and it's not helping. And even if you're doing fruits and veggies, like, these kids are not, you know, they don't know their capacities. They don't know how much they're supposed to be getting. So they're going to have a bite or two of the broccoli. Like, that's still not enough for your whole daily intake, right? So again, those multivitamins and multiminerals, and especially the right types that are methylated, they're not filled with dyes and fillers and corn syrups, and we don't like gummies. Gummies should be banned. But like all of that, it's like, then we can kind of fill in those gaps using trace minerals, like really focusing. So many people are filtering their water.
Yes, yeah.
The filter is taking out all of that. But where are you replacing your minerals? Most people aren't.
No, good point. Yeah. That's definitely not something that's recommended to do. So that's good to know. Okay.
No, not.
All right. And then for the supplements, yes, that can be a very tricky too. Are there certain, I guess people can come to you to get recommendations, because a lot of children's vitamins, to your point, like the gummies, there's probably little nutrition in there and a lot of sugar, like for the most part.
Yeah, they try to get them to taste, and then parents will say, like, well, they don't taste good. Well, I mean, they're not loaded with sugar, so, like, let's make it an acquired thing, right? And let's figure out how we can be creative. One thing that I recommend, and I talk about this on every podcast that I record, is to teach your child to swallow supplements young. So, like, I taught mine at the age of 3. I highly recommend it because so many things can be taken via capsule that are a healthier alternative than all the kid-friendly syrups and gummies and all of that. But regardless, capsules can still be open too. So, like, my kids and me, we take MitoCore, which is from Ortho Molecular. It's more of a mitochondrial support. You definitely have your anti-inflammatory support, and you have your minerals and your vitamins as well. And like for an adult, it's 4 capsules, but like you can obviously alter that based on the size of the child. And you can open those things up and put it in a smoothie or applesauce or whatever works for you, right? There are liquids as well. Like Mary Ruth's Organics does have some liquids. Again, like they're sweeter, but they're still a quality brand when it comes to just being reputation and having like the methylation and stuff in there too, and not getting like folic acid and non-methylated B vitamins. So there definitely are alternatives, but yes, we take each case individually based on what we can handle. If it's a sensory kiddo or if it's not, right, what's realistic to get something in them, they're not probably going to take a capsule that's opened. So a lot of factors.
And then, so we wanted to ask you also about environmental allergies. Benadryl, Zyrtec, Claritin are typically recommended. Are there other solutions for those?
Absolutely. We do a lot of what we call sublingual aminotherapy or slit therapy, where it's a desensitization of allergens. So we formulate a compound through a compounding pharmacy that we work with that takes these allergens and dilutes them to whatever power based on what we're seeing or what the lab values look like. It's like an algorithm that we follow. So based off of that, we put these allergens in this dropper bottle, and then parents can give a drop or a pump underneath their tongue 1 to 3 times a day to help their body desensitize against its immune response. So it's those particular allergens. So that's step one that we really follow. Step two would be addressing your air quality. So making sure that you don't have mold, making sure that you have a nice ventilated area, your carpet's not nasty. Dust is huge. I mean, we all think we dust, or maybe we don't because we all hate it, but there's so much dust, ceiling fans, etc. So an air doctor, like I swear by air doctors, I've had other brands before, and they do not take up as much this junk as an air doctor does. So they have small units you can put in the kids' rooms or bigger ones for your home. But addressing the air quality is huge for me. And then addressing symptoms, right? Is there a time and a place for Benadryl? Absolutely. If your child's having hives or having a reaction, if they need an EpiPen, like all of that is life-saving, and we definitely need to remember that. But if it's just like, hey, my kid gets itchy eyes, we got runny nose, we got this tickle cough at night, every morning they wake up, there's things we can do for that. One of my favorites is DHIS, and it's from Ortho Molecular as well. So they have capsules and they have chewables, but it's stinging nettle, bromelain, quercetin, NAC, vitamin C, all supporting that immune response and that cell-mediated IgE response or that allergen. And it makes a huge difference. So like I live in the middle of nowhere. I'm surrounded by so many grasses, trees, farms. And this year it was a rough start, you know, taking the DHIS 2 in the morning and 2 at night for the last couple weeks, but have no symptoms. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's interesting. It's like you don't kind of build up because you're still supporting the vitamin part. So you're not building up a tolerance. I mean, I grew up on Zyrtec, and then the Zyrtec stops working, you go to Allegra, and that stops working and you go to Claritin, right? Because what is that doing? It's an antihistamine. So you're developing a histamine response, which is like an allergy response, whether that looks like eyes, you know, nose, cough, itching, whatever. You take this antihistamine, it blocks it. So it's like taking Tylenol when you have a headache. It blocks that pain receptor, right? So it's doing the same thing as that histamine. So it's blocking it. So then when you actually come off of it, there is actually a withdrawal of an antihistamine that nobody talks about. And you will develop severe itching for like 2 weeks. But then when people come off of it, they start itching. They think what? Oh, I still have allergies, right? And they keep taking it. So now people are literally like, oh, I've taken Zyrtec for 4 or 5 years because as soon as I come off, I'm miserable. I was one of those. This was like 10 years ago. So I came off of the Zyrtec. It was 2 weeks. I'm not kidding you. It was itching like crazy. And then all of a sudden one day it just stopped. And my body was like, oh, thank God. So using stuff like that and addressing it, there's different homeopathies. There's Allergy Calm by Borwan. There's a few different ones that really can make a difference. Essential oils can sometimes help 2, and then nasal sprays. So again, clearing out that those nasal passages and making sure those allergens and that debris is not present. So whether it be the X-Clear Kids Nasal Spray, you know, there's like Sniffalex, which is another supplement. They're all kind of the same. It's more like that herbal pathway through that. So sinus rinses and irrigation can definitely help too. But it's just a matter of where you're dealing. You know, is it the cat that you're always cuddling in your room at night? Or is it the stuff that's blooming outside? Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm hearing a lot of different things. So definitely filtering our air in the bedroom or indoors would be huge. The Dehist, which is a supplement. Do you take that year round or just during your allergy season?
No, you just kind of take it when you have symptoms. And it's a pretty quick acting too. So people are like, well, do I have to take it like going into spring season? No, I would give the body a chance and see what it wants to do. And you can, since it being supplement, you can definitely increase your dosing. So some will start at 1 a day and then kind of increase as needed. If it's more morning symptoms, I advise taking it at night to kind of let it kick in for the morning. But Dehist is a very common one that we use a lot in the office and it works really, really well.
Great. Okay. And then something to be aware of is that you're almost kind of describing a rebound effect with the antihistamines, which that is new to me. I had no idea that that was possible, that that happens.
It is awful. And with rebound effects too, a lot of people and allergists will recommend Flonase.
Yes, I hear that a lot.
For kids because they have irritation. If you look, if you just grab a Flonase box in the store and you look at the back, one of the side effects of it, it can stunt your growth. So it's not supposed to be used for more than 7 days. It is a nasal steroid, right? You're not supposed to use it for more than 7 days. Think about it. Your nose is connected to your brain. Like, let's be honest here. So like everything, like, I mean, I don't think that sometimes we would walk through all these steps and realize like what's connected to what. Like, it's not just isolated to your nose. So again, so many people use it for more than 7 days though. And when you go to allergists and you go to these, you know, different providers, they're just like, oh, just take Flonase during your allergies. Now we have very thin nasal passages that tend to bleed. Now we have recurrent nosebleeds. And
wow. So, okay. Thank you for telling us all this stuff that we don't know, that we think it's no big deal. You know, oh, just take your Zyrtec and your Flonase and you're good. So
yeah.
This is very, very helpful. Really. So we also have to ask about fevers and teething and how Tylenol and Motrin are usually the go-tos for that. What are concerns there with that?
Yeah. I mean, there's a time and a place for medication. And it's not that I'm anti-whatever. It's just if it has a side effect, then I would rather not use it. And that's kind of how we work in our home. And so for us, it's just, you know, working through the child. Every child's different. Some kids are terrible teethers and they will scream uncontrollably no matter what you do. Now, do I believe that's normal? No, I still think maybe there's a nervous system response. We should probably get adjusted. We should probably look at a pediatric chiro and make sure everything is doing what it needs to do there. But there's different things that we can do. Camellia is one of my favorites, which is a homeopathic liquid. Works really, really well. People will sit in shame and say there's no published studies around amber teething necklaces. They were the best thing that ever happened to my children. And that goes back to like caveman days. Like, how do people think that like rocks and stones were found just for fun? Like, no, when people were in caves, like they were better than when they were on the outside.
Interesting,
right?
Yeah.
So many different things that can kind of evolve through that. But going into different herbs, going through different homeopathies, Earthly has a really awesome teething liquid that's all herbal that we tend to recommend a lot. And then just kind of comfort through that, comfort care, and then, you know, wearing the child and, you know, making sure that they're comfortable through that process too. But again, everybody's different. And same goes with fevers. If your child's miserable, they're not sleeping, they're struggling with night, they're restless, like they're moaning. Okay, well, you've tried all of the things already. The goal is not to let the child suffer, right? We don't recommend Tylenol. We recommend ibuprofen, first off.
And now is that, we've had a guest recently tell us that Tylenol is very tough on the liver, that it depletes glutathione. So she was not a fan of that. But is that sort of why, or is there other reasons?
I don't recommend Tylenol at all. The only downfall is that you can't use ibuprofen till over 6 months of age. So if you have to use something, that's where I sometimes always feel bad, because it's like, as parents, like if I had a baby 3 months old or four and they needed these meds, like I would be devastated, like knowing that these side effects exist, but you can't focus on that too long. You got to move on. Like, okay, well then how do we make sure that like we don't have side effects from giving, right? Supporting the liver and doing all that. But that's the only biggest thing is like, you know, you keep it on hand, but for fevers, it's like there's different homeopathies as well. Ferrum Fos and Belladonna are two top ones that we recommend a lot. And then doing like like apple cider vinegar socks. It's crazy enough. It seems so goofy. And I always feel like it's like witchcraft right. when we talk about it. But like it goes back to like, seriously, think about like the days when there was no meds. Like they used herbs. Like they crushed their own stuff. Like they did the tepid baths. Like they did all of these things. But then there was this time where pharmacology just became this huge, you know, influx, and then everything was medication driven. And now we're trying to get back into like the older days of where we were at because it works. And I had an Amish family come in to me not that long ago. And I always tell them, like, I always tell your story because the kiddo had fevers and they literally, they will like take a washcloth and they wipe their kids down with apple cider vinegar, like their entire bodies when they have a fever. And that is like their remedy on top of like herbs and teas and tinctures and all of that. So for us, like we just recommend taking like a pair of the child's socks, dousing them in apple cider vinegar, wringing them out, putting them on and putting a dry pair over the top or a wool pair. And that will bring that fever down. Now, of course, there's always talks of febrile seizures. There's talks of this, there's talks of that. Febrile seizure is an inflammatory response. So it's not indicative of the fever itself. Most of the time these seizures happen prior to a fever happening. It's like when an illness happens. And then it also can happen if the fever is brought up or brought down way too fast. But again, it's not the fever problem. There's an underlying process that still needs to be investigated as to why we're having those febrile seizures. They're not just considered normal. They're common. They're not normal. Okay. Right. So I'd say that relevant to that, we don't recommend baths. I don't know if we're kind of one of the out of norm people for that, but I do feel that it brings the temperature down too quickly. And it can exacerbate that neurological response of having a seizure. Think about it. You get out, like they're chilled. They have the chills now and they're shivering and you're trying to bundle them and the body just can't fluctuate that quickly to the response. So again, many homeopathics, many tinctures, apple cider vinegar socks, but treat the child.
How does the apple cider vinegar work? Like what do you know what mechanism?
Yeah, it's just a cooling effect. So like if you ever put it on your skin, you can kind of just feel that. But the properties in the apple cider vinegar and the way that that fermentation is happening, like it actually will pull that heat out through the bottom of the feet. And those socks will literally feel like fire. It's crazy. But it's also pretty cool too.
Yeah, that's the first time I've ever heard of this. So that's really cool to know.
Yeah.
Good info there.
Love it.
And then I guess we just had one more question about, so introducing grains or rice cereal is super common at 4 months. And I know you said that, I know I did this with my kids because that was what was recommended and I just followed what they said. But what would be like better about waiting until 6 months or so? And do you even want to start with grains?
Yeah, great question. So we talk about this a lot on our Instagram page. And you know, the GI system or a baby is very innate and intelligent by design, right? So they were born with this intestinal permeability to take in antibodies, maternal antibodies, breast milk, whatever the story may be. Over time, that intestinal permeability, like that leaky gut, seals back off. And then they're kind of able to start building their own and their microbiomes, you know, healthy enough and they have the good balance of bacteria. That doesn't happen till about 6 months. So when we're, and that's not, and no one's a book, right? So it may be longer, maybe earlier if they're preemie, if they're not, right? There's all these different factors. So then we're introducing grains and we tend to just have this huge inflammatory response and not everybody, right? But it can definitely lead to more allergies and asthma and eczema later on in life, which are like triangle triad of like those three things tend to go together. So with that, it's just avoiding the grains. You need to have a proper amount of digestive enzymes to break down grains. Now, the question yesterday from my mom was like, why do you think grains are just such a thing in this? Like, why is grains now this big hype in this country? Well, everything is so heavily sprayed and taken down, which is why European countries and Italy and people like with celiac disease can go there and eat pasta sometimes and feel 100% fine because they are not altering the way that our products are here. Anywho, but the inflammation's already there. So we don't actually recommend grains till the age of one.
Okay.
And that's because we want that microbiome to be nice and strong. Those digestive enzymes are not fully developed until their 1 year molars are in. So, you know, some kids don't get their molars at one, right? Sometimes it's 15 months, sometimes it's earlier, but everybody's different. And we tend to see the healthiest of kiddos. We recommend baby led weaning. We're giving them textures from the beginning. We don't recommend purees. And we're teaching them like just that balance of food, getting that palate nice and used to all the different types of food so that we can have that nice balance.
Okay. So yeah, that's definitely a different approach, but that makes a lot of sense. I never thought about the development of the teeth and maybe that's when they're ready for certain foods. Like I never thought about that before. That's really interesting.
Yeah. And it's just how it triggers the release of the finishing, like just the enzymes in the digestive system. You know, our teeth are definitely needed to help break stuff down too. Hence why they say you have to chew X amount of times, which nobody in the world does, but it's just that correlation with that. So it's not that the teeth are, you know, it's just, that's what it triggers.
The enzymes.
Just that release release of those enzymes too, and use that process. And as I always tell parents, like when you start feeding your baby solids and people are like, oh my gosh, the food looks the same as it went in, as it came out, that shows, and then over time it doesn't, right? That shows you the process of those enzymes kicking in and developing throughout the GI system and how important that those teeth and everything
that
are.
Makes perfect sense. Well, so being mindful of our time today, Jessica, we wanted to ask you what are two simple things parents can do today to feel empowered when it comes to their kids' healthcare?
Yeah, I think that just never give up. If something doesn't feel right, don't let somebody tell you that you're wrong. I think that happens so many times where it's just like you're not the medical professional and you don't want to make the decision for your child or the wrong decision for your child, I guess I should say. So just continue to fight for what you feel is right, but also don't try to reinvent the wheel. Not everybody has access to functional medicine. Not everybody has the funds. Like, I understand that and I get that, which is why we try to share as much education as we can to just teach parents, you know, hey, there's some healthy steps, but the best thing that you can do is just protect the four walls of your home. And that is always my take home with our parents is, you know, your diet is 100% on you. You can make sure that your air quality is good. You can make sure that you're not using, you know, harsh toxins or cleaners or products, soap, shampoos, detergents. All of that is in your control. Everything else on the outside, once you walk outside your home, is not in your control always. The air, the toxins, the, you know, planes, and we won't get into that. But it's just a lot of stuff, right? So control the four walls of your home. That's the best thing that you can do for your child.
That's great advice. Because yeah, it does get overwhelming. People are just like, where do I even start? So I like that just, you know, focus on what you can do in your own home and then what's out there when they go to the birthday party and there's goldfish and all and Gatorade and all that stuff. What can, you know, you try your best. Like,
yeah, and have those conversations, but educate them, you know, teach them to read a label, let them know what's in that stuff. Like, do you want to make this decision or not? Like, hey, you can have one thing this weekend. Is this what you want it to be? Or do you want to have something when we go to the barbecue later? Right. And like, it's okay with that because it's like, but the food will feed the disease. Like, we need to really empower these kids so that when they're older, they understand why, not just you can't have that. We don't do dyes. We don't do, teach them why they deserve to know. And they do understand. You would be shocked.
Yeah. No, I've seen that with my own kids that they really do get it and it makes a difference. And even if they are now they're teens, sometimes they don't make the best choice, but they still know, you know, how this affects them and how they feel after having it. So,
yep.
So you can connect with Jessica on Instagram at Well-Rooted Pediatrics or visit her website at wellrootedpediatrics.com.
Thank you so much, Jessica. This was so inspiring.
The information provided in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purpose of diagnosing, curing, treating, or preventing any disease. We are functional medicine certified health coaches and not licensed medical professionals. The opinions and advice of guests are their own and also not considered to be medical advice. Always consult with a healthcare professional when making any healthy lifestyle changes.
We would love to hear from you. Please leave a comment or review. Email us at info@functionalmoms.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please hit the subscribe button.